Members, the House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Members and visitors in the gallery, please rise for the prayer. We are pleased to have with us today Pastor Guy Glass from Bethany Baptist Church in Myakka City at an invitation of Representative Gregory. Pastor Glass, please approach the well.
I would like to take this opportunity to publicly thank the Speaker of the House, Mr. Chris Sprouse, and my representative, Mr. Tommy Gregory, for inviting and facilitating this opportunity to pray for this House this morning. I consider this both a distinct honor and privilege. Please allow me to pray for you. Precious God, as our elected officials from across this great state gather together to meet the needs of their constituents, from the East Coast to the Panhandle, please bless their efforts. I would ask you on their behalf to guide them in the decisions they will make and the actions they will take. Permit them to govern in such a way that they will discern the balance and balance the needs of the many and with the needs of the few, and in doing so provide security, the security of safety without the sacrifice of our freedoms. May they seek your wisdom, which you have promised to give freely to all who ask. May you give them a divine understanding of our needs so as to enact laws and debate issues with the goal of doing what is good, best, and right for Florida. Allow them to see the difference between the urgent and the important, and in so doing, execute the authority that you have given them with a keen sense of purpose and respect for all who will be affected by their decisions. May they not only react to the needs of our state, but also move proactively so as to prepare for the future. May the resulting decisions continue to place our state as a beacon and model for our nation. I would ask that you bless their families who have also sacrificed in order that these, your servants, would be away from their homes while they conduct the business of our government. Give them safety as they travel in order to return to their districts and homes. Protect them this day and each day from hurt, from harm and danger, for they are truly this day and every day serving a divine purpose. God bless our representatives, God bless our state, and God bless America. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor Glass. The clerk will unlock the machine and members will record their presence. Have all members recorded their presence? The clerk will lock the machine and announce the presence of a quorum.
114 members voting, a quorum is present, Mr. Speaker.
Members and visitors in the gallery, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. The Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Anderson Parker from Navarre at the invitation of Speaker Pro Tem Avila, Stephanie Rodriguez from Miami at the invitation of Representative Fabricio, Liam Teeter from Clearwater at the invitation of Representative Latvala, Stryker Williams from Bel Air at the invitation of Representative Latvala.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We are pleased to have with us today Dr. Andrea King Frile from Tallahassee at the invitation of Representative Burton. Welcome to the Florida House. Our law enforcement officer of the day is Detective Alice Simondal at the invitation of Representative Bell. During her years of service with the Hardy County Sheriff's Office, she's been instrumental in after-school programs designed to teach students about law enforcement and its careers. Detective Simondal, not only do you keep our community safe, but your work at after-school programs will help with future generations who will take up the mantle of law enforcement. Thank you for your service and welcome to the Florida House. Are there corrections to the journal? Hearing none, show the journal approved. Are there reports of standing committees and subcommittees?
None on the desk, Mr. Speaker.
Are there motions related to committee and subcommittee references? Seeing none. Are there matters on reconsideration? Are there bills of joint resolutions on third reading?
On the desk, Mr. Speaker.
Read the first bill.
By Judiciary Committee and Representative Zika and others, CS House Bill 9, a bill to be entitled An Act Relating to Protecting Consumers Against Pandemic-Related Fraud.
Representative Zika, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is the House Bill 9, Protecting Consumers Against Fraud During a Pandemic that we've discussed yesterday.
Are there any amendments?
None on the desk, Mr. Speaker.
Members, we are in debate on the bill. Any members wish to be recognized in debate? Seeing none. Representative Zika, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this is an important piece of legislation that protects our consumers against fraud during a pandemic. I'd like to take this moment and thank the Speaker for his support on this important bill, and also like to thank Chairman Perez, Chairman Byrd, and Chairman Leake and staff for the support during this process. I ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Members, Representative Zika, having closed on his bill, the question now recurs on final passage of House Bill 9. The clerk will unlock the machine and members will proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Have all members voted? The clerk will lock the machine and announce the vote.
113 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Speaker.
Show the bill passes. Congratulations, Representative Zika. Read the next bill.
By Judiciary Committee and Representative McClure and others, CS House Bill 7, a bill to be entitled An Act Relating to Civil Liability for Damages Relating to COVID-19.
Representative McClure, you're recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is the civil liability for damages relating to COVID-19 bill we discussed yesterday.
Are there any amendments?
None on the desk, Mr. Speaker.
All right, members, we're going to move in debate. If I could just have your attention for a moment. Members, we are going to be in structured debate this afternoon on Representative McClure's bill. What that will mean is we have Representative Jenny in the back who will be on the con side of the bill. So if you would wish to debate on the con side of the bill, the minority party has been allocated an hour of that time. That time will be managed by Representative Jenny. Please go see Representative Jenny if you'd like to debate on the con side of the bill. Leader Grant, an hour has been allocated to the majority party. Leader Grant will be managing that time this afternoon. If you wish to debate on the pro side of Representative McClure's bill, you can go see Leader Grant. The way that it will work, members, is that we'll split up that hour into 15-minute blocks. We will begin with the minority party. We will go through their 15 minutes. At the end of that 15 minutes, or if they yield time back to the floor, we will then alternate to the majority party. We'll continue to alternate until the time has expired. Representative Jenny, you're recognized.
Mr. Speaker, thank you as always. Good morning, members. For those of you that I have not had the opportunity to meet, my name is Representative Evan Jenny, and I will be your tour guide this morning on this particular forest of discontent. Along the way, we will hear about procedural hurdles so gargantuan, they evoke names like Everest, Kilimanjaro, and Denali. Also, there'll be an in-depth discussion on the role and responsibility of both judges and juries. I can promise you for certain that the term gross negligence will echo in this chamber today. And while we're at it, we might as well add good faith effort and affidavit to the list of upcoming sonic ricochets. There will be extensive discussion on the details of deeply concerning potential violations of two separate constitutions, federal and state. Due process, y'all. But I will leave the intricacies of that to the attorneys in oppositions. As I've said before on this floor, I am not an attorney. I merely play one on the Florida Channel. What you will not hear, however, is a desire to leave businesses unprotected. Those of us in opposition simply feel a much more balanced approach is desperately needed for all of Florida. An equitable balance is necessary and must be struck between businesses, consumers, and working Floridians. I believe that there is no balance here, and I can say that with some level of certainty. After all, just yesterday on this floor in debate on Representative Fentress Driscoll's excellent amendment, barcode 760325, We heard from a proponent of the bill that workers were, and I quote, extraneous to the bill. Extraneous to the bill. And therein, members, is where I believe the problem lies. Working Floridians being viewed as extraneous, not pertinent, irrelevant. Outside of a few carve-outs for a handful of professions, working Floridians have been extraneous. And that's the way it's been around here, time after time. And I have to say, I find Cyndi Lauper's rendition infinitely prettier. Extraneous to hundreds and hundreds of bills that affect them. We believe this chamber has a responsibility to all the parts of this economic formula. Florida's businesses, Florida's consumers, and working Floridians. They all deserve protections. All three are interlocked, the very foundation of our economy. And like the concrete that forms the foundation of this very building, a proper balance must be achieved. A certain amount of cement, a certain amount of air and water, a certain amount of gravel, and a certain amount of sand. An improper mixture will lead to a faulty foundation. But I fear I may have gotten too far afield. Lord knows I wouldn't want to do that. After all, a three-minute debate that includes references to Mount Kilimanjaro, Cyndi Lauper, and the composition of concrete could be accused of just that. You might even call it extraneous. But that's enough for me. There are too many bright minds in this chamber that we need to hear from, folks on both sides of the issue. And with that in mind, Mr. Speaker, I would like to yield my time to Representative Carlos Smith.
Representative Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And thank you for the moments of levity, Representative Jenny, and for actually some legitimate concerns. Listen, members, we're told with this bill that there is an overwhelming public necessity for blanket immunity from COVID-19. That overwhelming necessity is actually just fear and anxiety, as opposed to actual litigation that's happening in the state of Florida, because it's not. So we're taking an already high standard of proving culpability for something like negligence, and we're putting it even higher. This bill takes away the constitutional right to access the court. And when it comes to the doctor's affidavit, which we know was the subject of many smart, very thought out amendments that would really improve the bill, what doctor is going to want to get involved in litigation under penalty of perjury that they're being asked to attest to for non-medical findings? We're asking them to attest to non-medical findings. Doctors, what do they have anything to do with this? They don't. But that's the point. The sponsors and the supporters of this bill have admitted that they want to raise the bar very, very high to make it extremely difficult to be able to bring litigation. And they came right up to the line where they basically said the quiet part out loud. We want to make it impossible for them to bring litigation, even if there is negligence. The constitutional right to access the court, therefore, revoked. We know small businesses need relief. Some legitimately need protection from liability, but this is not it. We know that Disney's relieved by this bill. I'm sure Publix is relieved as well. The Florida Chamber, very happy. But here's the reality. This is being framed as the long-awaited relief from the Florida legislature after we took nearly a year off of work. 43 legislatures had special sessions to offer relief to businesses during COVID. We were not one of them. And my real concern is when it comes to real direct relief to our small businesses, giving them the funds they need to pay their commercial rent that they're behind on, giving them the direct relief that they need to retain their employees, the real relief that small businesses have been waiting for, that our work unfortunately ends here with this bill, because there is no direct relief planned. Members, we have to do better than this. Blanket immunity from COVID liability is not the long-awaited relief that small businesses have been waiting for. Please vote no on this poorly worded bill and well-intentioned, but a bill that is not the solution for our small businesses. Thank you.
Representative Jenny.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. Up next, I would like to yield my time to Representative Omari Hardy.
Representative Hardy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First off, let me say this is the first time I'll debate a bill on the floor of this House, and it's something I'm going to savor and cherish for the rest of my life. As the son of a woman who taught social studies for 30 years and who heard repeatedly about the importance of what it is that folks who sit in our seats do, this is something I'm going to savor and cherish. And we have to get what we do right, because it's going to have real consequences for everyday people when we walk out of this Capitol. And it's for that reason that I'm a little disappointed in this effort with respect to House Bill 7. This should not be our priority. No one needs this bill. Our constituents don't need it. Workers don't need it. Small businesses don't need it. I would argue that even large corporations don't need it, even though they want it. And yet, the second bill we hear on this floor, the second bill we're going to vote on, is a bill that, at the expense of everyday Floridians, will provide pretrial immunity to the largest corporations in the state of Florida. It's disappointing because it should not be our priority at this time, but it's also disappointing because, as Representative Smith said, the bill is a little sloppy in its wording. The bill says that a defendant is going to have immunity if they make a good faith effort to substantially comply with authoritative or controlling government issued health standards or guidance, and yet does not define standards or guidance. And it's a little interesting to me because I'm wondering if a comms intern goes on Facebook and makes a post on the behalf of a municipality, is that a standard or guidance? If a mayor makes some comments at a press conference, is that a standard or guidance? You look at the fact also that a defendant gets a menu of standards or guidance to choose from. They can pick any standard or guidance issued by any government authority in this state, and that's the one that they get to use as a defense. That's the one that they get to use to invoke this right of pretrial immunity. That's the standard, whatever one they choose, as these attorneys are going to engage in this race to the bottom to identify the government entity that has the worst and least comprehensive standards. That's the one that they're going to choose to get immunity. And in addition to that, I have to say I'm genuinely surprised that government entities are covered in this bill. I want you to think about that. You get immunity if you make a good faith effort to substantially comply with standards or guidance issued by a government. And governments are eligible to get immunity under this bill. I imagine on the other side of the aisle, there are not many people who are fans of Governor Cuomo. Governor Cuomo issued some standards and some guidance and some policies that sent COVID-positive people into nursing homes. He was following his own standard. And people got sick and died because he was following his standards. There's a circularity to this because the governor should probably be held accountable for that. And yet the very cause of action for a COVID-related tort claim would also serve as the source of his immunity against those claims. There's a circularity to this bill that's genuinely surprising because I know folks on the other side of the aisle here believe that the law should be used to restrain government and not to restrain people seeking justice when their government wrongs them. It's surprising to me. But in addition to that, I just want to say, and it's been said before, that this bill is an illusory promise. The proponents of the bill and the staff analysis went out of their way to say that, no, we're not foreclosing the possibility that someone bringing a COVID-related tort claim might succeed. We're not foreclosing that possibility. We're just saying that if you're going to bring such a claim, some conditions need to be met. But when you look at the conditions, they can't really be met. The affidavit requirement, asking a doctor to do something that he can't do, to attest under penalty of perjury as to facts that he's not qualified to attest to, it's an impossibility. And so, for me, this bill has a when pigs fly sort of quality to it. You can file a COVID-related tort claim, and you have the possibility of succeeding when pigs fly, or when hell freezes over, or when doctors do things that they know they can't do. This bill should not be our priority. It shouldn't be the second bill we hear. We have constituents struggling, businesses closing, folks getting sick. We could fill the agenda with bill after bill to help those people, and yet this is the second bill we hear. It's not well-crafted, and we should not vote for this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Hardy. Leader Jenny, you got 10 seconds. You're recognized.
We'll go ahead and yield that back to the floor, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jenny. Members, a few announcements before we go to Leader Grant. Representative Caruso, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to make an announcement and to take a moment of personal privilege. As we join here today, it's easy to see our many differences. And I believe it's our cultural diversity that makes this great state and our country strong. With that said, many of you know that my friend and yours, Representative Randy Fine, is of the Jewish faith. And you may have noticed his absence today. Today, the Fine family celebrates their son Jacob's bar mitzvah, the moment in life, in his life, when he becomes a man in his faith. So I ask the Jewish caucus and all the members of this house to rise and repeat a symbolic celebratory toast of Mazel Tov to Jacob and the Fines. So to Jacob Fine from the Florida House, I ask you to say, Mazel Tov. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Congratulations to Jacob, Representative Fine, and his family. Representative Bell, you're recognized for a recognition.
Thank you, Speaker. I rise today to recognize Levi Simandl. He is accompanying his mom, our law enforcement of the day. Levi is 11 years old, and he's in the fifth grade of school and attends Parkview Prep Academy in Avon Park. Welcome, Levi.
Welcome to the Florida House, Levi. We're all super proud of your mom, Levi. All right, members, Leader Grant, you are recognized for the pro side of the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will yield my time to Representative Duggan.
Representative Duggan, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Leader Grant. Members, this is the third stop for me on this bill. And along the way, there have been several objections asserted that focus on due process issues and procedural hurdles, as Rep. Jenny referenced in his opening statement. And I think the predicate of that opposition is that the procedure laid out in Section 3C of the bill somehow vests extraordinary discretion in the judge, or somehow is a departure from the norms of civil trial practice. I would educate you that this discretion, this judicial discretion and procedure, is available today to all civil trial litigants. The Florida Rules of Civil Procedure lay out a process under Rule 1.140, subsection C, for what is known as a judgment on the pleadings. It's one of the rules promulgated by the Florida Supreme Court to govern and regulate the civil trial practice in our state. So it comes from the highest legal authority in the state. And the rule provides that after all the pleadings are closed, both parties have filed their initial pleadings, either party can move under this rule for a judgment on the merits of the case based only on the allegations in the pleadings to test the legal sufficiency of those allegations. If the court grants the motion, it's a final adjudication on the merits. The case is over. The procedure in Section 3C of the bill is a functional equivalent to the judicial review that is permitted under a motion for judgment on the pleadings, as permitted by the Florida Rules of Civil Procedure. And it actually, our procedure in 3C of this bill provides the court greater discretion and flexibility to make a determination based on the initial pleadings and filings of the affidavit, because the bill provides explicitly, and I'm quoting from the language, that evidence tending to demonstrate whether the defendant made a good faith effort to comply is admissible in that initial determination. In a motion for judgment on the pleadings, there's very limited discovery available. It's essentially limited to jurisdictional issues in the case. So this process provides greater flexibility and discretion to a judge than would normally be the case under our rules of civil procedure. So rule section 3C of this bill and this vesting in the judge of an initial determination as to whether there is immunity or not is not a departure from civil trial norms, nor is it a due process violation. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, I want to address the allegations that this creates somehow blanket immunity. We as a state could have declared that there is no tort under Florida law for the airborne transmission of an infectious respiratory disease. In order to declare that there is no tort under our state law, controlling case law, it has to either have not been present in the common law or not be stated in the Florida Declaration of Rights in the 1968 Constitution. And neither of those apply to the airborne transmission of an infectious respiratory disease. And a moment's thought will make that clear to you. You cannot sue somebody for giving you the flu. You cannot sue somebody for giving you the cold. Had we made that determination, that would have been blanket immunity. But what did we do instead? We came up with a detailed process that balances compelling and competing state interests. That is our role. That is our job. We have not abdicated that responsibility, and we certainly have not provided for blanket immunity. I yield the rest of my time.
Leader Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We yield our time back.
Representative Jenny, you're recognized.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. At this point, I would like to yield my time to Representative Michael Grieco.
Grieco, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I want to start by saying thank you, Mr. Speaker, because I owe you one from yesterday. So good morning, everybody. I during my first term, I didn't debate too much and probably not going to debate too much this year. But I wanted to start off kind of early and address this one because on February 15th, I had a text that I sent to Rep. McClure. and it was, I'm up, when he asked me about this bill. And on February 15th, I was up on this bill. I still want to be up on this bill, but I'm not, because after February 15th, there was an amendment placed on the bill, which in my opinion is a poison pill. And all due respect to my colleague that just spoke from the other side, it is blanket immunity, the way it's written. And I'm gonna read it to you real quick and I'm gonna explain to you why. So, if more than one source or set of standards or guidance was authoritative or controlling at the time of the cause of action accrued, the defendant's good faith effort to substantially comply with any one of those sources or sets of standards or guidance confers such immunity from civil liability. That is so broadly written that someone could claim that they are following the guidance of the state of Texas, and in turn, they are immune. This is not creative lawyering. I've been practicing law for 21 years. This is simply what's going to be used by the insurance companies. I'm a small business owner. I want to be supportive of this bill. I understand the purpose behind it. And when it passes in about an hour, you know, people are going to be able to say, look, we're protecting businesses. We're doing what we can. We're trying to prevent all of this onslaught of litigation that's going to be coming our way. But the devil's in the details. And although that bill may prevent a lot of that, it's going to cause a lot of problems when you have people abusing the process on the business side, and consumers are not going to be protected if somebody is being so negligent that someone does get injured. So with that, I yield my time. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Jenny.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. Up next, I would like to yield my time to Representative Emily Schlossberg.
Representative Schlossberg, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's a lot of issues, as already discussed, with this bill. This is a solution to a non-existent problem. This bill is based on the premise that there is, will be, an imminent flood of litigation concerning COVID-19 pandemic. This year, well, it's been about a year, there's been no flood of COVID-related negligence claims, only a trickle of claims. Rather, the bulk of the cases have been complaints involving civil rights, employment, or insurance issues. Why should we offer businesses near blanket immunity against an almost non-existent threat? The public deserves reasonable protection against bad actors. Businesses should be held accountable when they fail to protect the public. The requirement of the physician, it requires physicians to operate outside the scope of their professional training and offer their belief to a reasonable degree of medical certainty about whether a plaintiff was injured as a result of the defendant's act or omission, all without the opportunity to review the evidence in discovery. As of this morning, nearly 2 million Floridians have contracted COVID-19, and it continues to spread. Over 31,000 Florida residents have passed away due to COVID-19. After seeing how this disease has destroyed lives, families, and the fabric of our communities, I find it shocking that this bill fails to focus on the pressing need to protect the general public from the dangers of COVID-19. Clearly, public safety and the safety of employees is far less important than the interests and desires of businesses. What this bill does is highlight the unfounded need to protect the continued viability of our state's businesses from an almost non-existent threat of imminent litigation. Rather than limiting plaintiffs' rights to access the courts, I ask that we focus on the immediate threats facing our state. Rather than offering blanket immunity to businesses, I ask that we work together to mitigate the spread of COVID. The health and safety of our constituents is critical. I can't support this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jenny.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Up next, I would like to yield my time to Representative Ben Diamond.
Representative Diamond, you're recognized.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. Members, thank you for the good discussion on the amendments yesterday. I wish some of them had been adopted. I'm a small business owner too. I want to see us take steps together as a legislature to discourage frivolous lawsuits against our small businesses. I think that's a very admirable goal. At the same time, I think we should be taking steps as a legislature to reassure Floridians that their safety is our priority. And that was what I was trying to get at with some of these amendments, similar to our discussion yesterday, like the one that said that if you have an employee as a business owner, if you have an employee and they're testing positive for COVID and they're reasonably refusing not to come to work, that employee is going to be protected under our state's employment laws. I'm disappointed, members, that we haven't worked this bill to address what I think are some pretty clear issues with some of the language. And I just want to take a minute to talk again about my concerns with regard to this affidavit that we're asking our doctors to sign. And, you know, when you read the language in lines 138 through 141 of the bill, a doctor has to attest that the plaintiff's COVID damages occurred as a result of the defendant's acts or omissions. So let's just think about this for a second. Mrs. Jones contracts COVID. She's an elderly woman. She has extensive medical bills because she's hospitalized for over a month. So she has hundreds of thousands of dollars of bills. And she seeks to bring a lawsuit against a big box retailer where she went to buy her groceries and get her medicine, right? Was the COVID the result for Mrs. Jones of the defendant's acts or omissions? So if I'm my good friend Dr. Masullo, the defendant's acts or omissions, the big box retailer's conduct, is what I'm being asked to sign under penalties of perjury. So I'm a lawyer, I don't do this type of litigation, but let me just play this out a little bit. Did big box retailer in downtown St. Petersburg, let's say Mrs. Jones says, I don't think they were following the local mask ordinance. Did big box retailer have signs up? Did they have policies in place to communicate to their store managers about the importance of wearing masks? Were those procedures enforced in the store? I just don't understand, candidly, how our physician is supposed to attest to those factual issues at that stage in the case. And again, this is a new idea that got put into this bill, and I have a lot of respect for our House staff. I think they're terrific. But none of the other states that have enacted legislation have done this. I think we could accomplish our goal by taking this provision out of the bill. I think we will have an opportunity, hopefully, to look at this bill again if it doesn't align with the Senate. And I just encourage all the members to look carefully at that paragraph. I don't think we've gotten this legislation right yet, folks. I think we can hopefully get the bills to align with the Senate, make these final changes so that more of us can be supportive of the bill, but I don't think it's there yet, and for those reasons, I will be down on the bill today. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Diamond. Representative Jenny.
Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker, and with one Benjamin being done, we'll now turn our attention to another, Representative Christopher Benjamin, and I would like to yield my time to him, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Benjamin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And like my colleague down in Miami, I think I owe you a couple of thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I do. My thoughts go back to yesterday when I was questioned, Representative McClure, about this bill. And I asked him, what about our current legal system gives pause such that it is necessary for this bill. Because as a lawyer of over 18 years, I have faith in our legal system. And I understand that our legal system has in place things that handles some of the issues that this bill seeks to address. When questioned, Representative McClure said, "We want to prevent frivolous claims." And maybe you guys can remember, I asked, well, what does our system have now to prevent frivolous claims? The thing that we have now to prevent frivolous claims is our rules of procedure, our statutes. So what in our statutes now prevent frivolous claims? Or how do we attack within our system frivolous claims? You heard from Representative Dugan as to one of those tools that we have already within our system to attack frivolous claims. And you can file what he said was a motion for judgment on the pleadings. You can say what was written isn't sufficient for a cause of action. There's no remedy based upon what was written, or what was written isn't satisfactory to the standards. But not only that, it's not just that you have as a tool. We also have in our system as a tool for those really frivolous claims what we call a 57.105 motion. What is a 57.105 motion doing? Why is it a very powerful tool against frivolous claims? Because it says to an attorney, remember your oath to not bring frivolous claims. It says to an attorney, remember the ethics rules that says you won't bring frivolous claims. And to the fact that this may be a frivolous claim, we're going to put you on the hook for the other side's attorney's fees. Because really, that's what we're worried about, right? We're worried about what will it cost the defendant to have to defend against these claims. So 57.105 says don't worry about those costs and expenses, because if it's a frivolous claim, the attorney and his client, they're going to pay you. So our system has put forth procedures that handles frivolous claims such that we don't need these types of acts to address that. Our system works when we have enough faith in it to abide by it. They don't need a blanket immunity. And so I echo my colleagues when they say that in essence what you have established is immunity. If you can never get a doctor to write the affidavit, then the affidavit will prevent all claims. It becomes a bar to all claims. Now, two things can happen in that regards. A court can look at that and say, you know what? This is an unreasonable bar to the access of courts, and so this particular requirement is going to be stricken. The court will stricken the requirement. So that for whatever reason you believe that you needed it, it now becomes unnecessary. Or we're going to fight about it. And when we fight about it, we do the very thing that you say you're attempting to not do and cause additional expenses for your defendants. One speaker got up yesterday and said, you know what? They're not telling you the truth about discovery. They can get discovery. It's called pretrial, a motion for pretrial discovery. And they're right. We can file a motion for pretrial discovery.
Representative Benjamin, your time being expired. Yeah, I'll let you briefly conclude if you like.
Thank you. But what will happen is, with this requirement of an affidavit and the sufficiency of the affidavit, the court's going to grant that motion for pretrial discovery, and your defendant will incur the cost of pretrial discovery. This bill doesn't do what you believe that it does, and it doesn't make the savings that you believe it does. Have faith within the system. vote this bill down. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Leader Grant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to yield my time to Representative DeSigley.
Representative DeSigley, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First, I want to thank Representative McClure for this very important bill. As many of you know, I'm a small business owner. And a year ago, when we concluded with this legislative session, I went back home and started to deal with a pandemic. I've got 28 employees. Every single one of those employees are like family to me. So when we realized that we were in the middle of a pandemic, a global pandemic, the first thing we did is that we put the necessary protocols in place to protect our employees. PPP, sanitizing the office, mask requirements, training, updating our employee handbook. We were responsible, as thousands of other small business owners in this state and in this great nation, we were responsible. And as the days went on, we didn't know what the next day was going to bring. We didn't know if the whole entire economy was going to completely shut down. And for many business owners, it did. Thankfully, I was lucky enough to be part or to be considered an essential business, where all small business are essential, as we, most of us, agree. Each and every day, we would wake up not knowing what that day was going to bring. Businesses are closing. Our revenues are going down. The stress level is going up. I could not imagine what the feeling would be like if someone knocked on my door in my office and served me papers that somebody, an employee, a customer, is going to sue me. It's going to file a lawsuit because they claim that we were irresponsible and that individual got this awful, awful disease. I don't know what that would feel like. I don't know if it would feel any worse than every single day we'd wake up with that big question mark of what is going to happen today? What's going to happen tomorrow? Oh, by the way, what's going to happen to my kids, to my wife, to my mother-in-law? So thank you for this bill, because this bill protects business owners like me who work too hard every single day, day in and day out, and thank God, in my case, for generations. This is the kind of legislation that makes me proud to be a member of this great Florida House. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you from day one, saying this session is going to be about telling stories. And so I have nothing written down here, because this is my story and this is my relief that I need, that my employees need, and that every single business owner in this great state needs. With that, Mr. Speaker, I ask everybody in this great House to vote favorably on Representative McClure's bill. Thank you. I yield my time.
Leader Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We yield our remaining time.
Having yield back the time, Representative Jenny.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. At this point, I would like to yield my time to Representative Yvonne Hinson.
Representative Hinson.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to House Bill number 7. COVID-19 has brought many challenges and opportunities into our lives. But I too believe, the sun is rising in Florida. Since the beginning of the pandemic, we all believed that a flood of litigation was imminent. The pandemic has been affecting our lives more than a year now, but the number of civil suits filed for exposure to COVID-19 remain minimal, which makes HB7 a solution looking for a problem. Instead, the overwhelming number of suits have been brought by businesses themselves whose insurance has denied their interruption claims. It's important, Mr. Speaker, this doesn't let people and businesses off the hook, says the President of the Florida Senate. In these unprecedented times, businesses should be providing reasonable protections to the public and their employees. In the beginning of this pandemic, public supermarkets, for instance, demanded their employees not wear a mask. When I walk into a business and see a large group of unmasked people, I can walk out. Employees cannot. In HB7's current form, since you've accepted no amendments to this point, a doctor has to give testimony to a truth he has no knowledge of. This is called hearsay evidence. A citizen loses his constitutional right to a trial by a jury of his peers, placing his fate in the hands of a judge. I don't know about you, but I don't want that. We are requiring businesses to follow guidelines that Florida has not adopted. Businesses, I admit, do need protection from frivolous lawsuits, but not at the expense of workers, customers, let's not forget tourists, students, parents, teachers, parishioners, healthcare workers, and patients. Mr. Speaker, if you and your cohort choose to adopt this bill, every business should be required to post at their door, warning, enter at your own risk. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Jenny.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. Next up, I would like to yield my time to Representative Angie Nixon.
Representative Nixon, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's often said that small businesses are the lifeline of the community. I'd like to offer up that it's actually the workers that are the lifelines of those businesses, and they keep those businesses running, and they should be protected as such. In a time when businesses should be ensuring the health and safety of their employees, their workers, and their customers, this COVID liability bill is allowing just the opposite by protecting negligent businesses. Too often, this body and leadership of this state side with big corporations and not the working class. Gerardo Gutierrez. Everyone should say his name. Gerardo Gutierrez. Those at home should say his name as well. Mr. Gutierrez was a 70-year-old resident of Miami-Dade County, employed, and he worked at a store that was part of a grocery store chain headquartered in the state of Florida. Mr. Gutierrez requested to wear a mask, and his employer denied him that right. Well, that denial had grave consequences. Gerardo Gutierrez contracted COVID-19 from a fellow employee his family contends in a lawsuit. Now that same employer is fighting a lawsuit and has even sought to get it thrown out by a judge and handled by the workers' compensation system instead. The judge rejected that motion. It's time for this body to show that they truly care about workers, about the working class families in this state, so that there will be no more Gerardo Gutierrez's that lose their life. You know, we were just asked earlier to celebrate in the life of Chair Representative Fine's son, because he's celebrating his bar mitzvah. We were told to say mazel tov, asked to say mazel tov. And I'm asking you, my colleagues, on behalf of all the frontline workers, all of the heroes that actually keep this great state running, it's time to celebrate their lives by voting down this bad bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Jenny.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. And up next, I would like to yield my time to Representative Anna Escamani.
Representative Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker. And thank you so much, Representative Angie Nixon, for those powerful words in opposition to this bill. I first just want to start off with saying that I have the utmost respect for the bill's sponsor, Representative McClure. Folks might know that last weekend, Representative McClure saved my sister and I when we ran out of gas in Plant City. It happens to the best of us. And so I just want to be clear that as we have this debate and seek opposition to the bill, there is nothing but respect for our members and for the bill sponsor himself. Now, I come to this policy proposal as a lover of small businesses, but as the daughter of working class people. If my mom was still alive today, chances are she would still be working in retail. When she passed away in 2004, she was a manager at Kmart. My dad worked part-time at Walt Disney World. And so I love our small businesses, but I also love our workers. And empathy, I think, is one of the biggest qualities of being a public official. And empathy is something we definitely don't have enough in politics today. So I just want to encourage us to, of course, put ourselves in the shoes of small business owners, many who are here today, but to also put ourselves in the shoes of workers who don't often have a voice in this process, who might not be the folks who always go out and vote or contact their elected officials, but are living day by day, keeping our economy running, many going to work even when they feel unsafe, many who have lost their lives to this pandemic. Now, I am not an attorney, but we do know that businesses are subject to civil liability, and candidly, the threat of a lawsuit, I think, is a reality every day for businesses here in Florida. But we also know that when businesses are careful and intentionally careful and consider the risks around them and practice policies that are industry practice, that are either set by the government or even just common sense, that when they put in place these type of standards, that the chance of litigation is very, very, very low. And in fact, during the COVID-19 pandemic, I think we can take a lot of pride in saying many of Florida's businesses did just that. I mean, even with the theme parks in my backyard, we have not seen the theme parks become the COVID-19 hotspots that a lot of folks feared, right? Because safety standards were put into place, guests were required to follow certain rules like wearing a mask. And I look back to some of our small businesses, one of the salons in my district, one of the first to open back up, had very strict procedures. You know, folks wash their hands before coming in, you get temperature checked, policies are in place to make sure that their staff are safe and their clients are safe as well. So law-abiding business owners are not going to see lawsuits. And as I asked the rep, the sponsor in committee, you know, how many lawsuits are we talking about? And I know other members already talked about this. We're not seeing that flood of litigation at all. In fact, we're not even seeing it across the country. The most lawsuits we are seeing, by the way, are businesses suing their insurance companies for business interruption insurance, which we all know has not been providing coverage for the pandemic, and many businesses are mad about that because they pay into their insurance and expect it to be there for them, and that hasn't been the case. And so with that said, we're not seeing this flood of lawsuits, but as Rep. Nixon just outlined, we are seeing workers die. And the cases have been worse in other states. I'm sure you've read the stories of meatpacking factories and just how unsafe those environments are in general, let alone with a pandemic. But we have seen workers die at the hands of COVID-19. And for Mr. Gutierrez and his family, a 70-year-old worker at a Miami Publix, he's not going to come back. No matter what we do, Mr. Gutierrez and others like him are not going to come back. And so it is difficult to even seek a litigation to make a claim, but I think it's important to realize that we are still losing people to this pandemic. And those families, if they feel like the business was negligent, should have a path to seek justice. With that said, one of my biggest concerns with this bill is we are potentially incentivizing bad behavior. We have to remember in this nation's history, there has been a series of high-profile lawsuits that have actually led to businesses putting into place safety standards. I mean, there are so many examples, whether it's E. coli and lettuce, or for my meat eaters out there, I'm a vegan, so I don't experience this, but we know for those who like a good hamburger, there's been cases of Jack in the Box here in Florida years ago, and it was major lawsuits that led to those businesses tightening up their processes, ensuring that there was public safety in mind. And so if we put into place these type of shields for liability, we're also incentivizing bad behavior. We're incentivizing
Representative
Eskimani,
I apologize for interrupting you. Members, it's getting a little loud up here. Out of respect for Representative Eskimani and the other members who are going to debate this afternoon, I'd ask that you keep your conversations to a minimum or take them back to the bubble. Representative Eskimani, recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that. I know folks have a lot going on, so I appreciate folks' time. I just want to stress that myself and our caucus members here in the back rows, we are not unsympathetic to the needs of our business community. And I do think that there was an opportunity to seek a balance in this legislation, to balance the business and the worker. And my colleagues provided amendments yesterday to try to secure that balance, but unfortunately it was not met. And so if this bill moves forward today, the biggest ask I have for the group is to consider what businesses and workers need right now. Not only is that increased access to the vaccine, and thank God yesterday our teachers can start getting vaccinated in the state of all ages, which is a step in the right direction, but also small business relief. Representative Benjamin spoke of this in his remarks, and I want to echo it. The businesses in my community have not come to me asking for liability. They have come to me asking for rent relief. They have come to me asking for an increase of PPP or an increase in the Emergency Bridge Loan Program, which I don't have to remind you all in this space because I know we're all in this together. But when the governor's office announced a small bridge loan program, that money, that $50 million, that money was gone within a day. And 38,000 small businesses applied for it and only 1,000 got it. Those are the type of demands that I'm getting every day for my small business community. I filed a bill around limiting the amount that food delivery apps can charge small businesses. These San Francisco-based companies, they can charge upwards of 30% to our small businesses to deliver food, biting into their very margin profits, their very narrow margin profits already. And so there are some really fantastic solutions out there filed by colleagues in the front rows and the back rows that would deliver relief to small businesses. And that's what people are asking us for. Businesses want to take care of their workers, and we should not disincentivize that motivation. We should instead look at means to fund direct cash relief to keep our businesses open and operational. And yes, there is a lot of anxiety out there. And I know Rep. McClure says this a lot, that the fear that businesses have over lawsuits is very real. I want to just add that the fear of dying at work due to the pandemic is also very real. And so we have to strike that balance in meeting the fears of the business community while also meeting the fears of the worker. And unfortunately, I don't think this bill strikes that balance. Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker, and I urge our members to vote no on this legislation.
Representative Jenny, with 10 seconds left.
Mr. Speaker, today's your lucky day. I'm going to yield this back to the floor.
Leader Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We yield our time to Representative Rommel.
Representative Rommel, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and members. You know, we've heard a lot of debate, and I think the one thing that we can all agree on
that about a year ago when we were in this chamber and the NCAA decided to stop the basketball tournament, we knew that something was something was going on that was going to impact us all. Never did we know that a year later, millions of people around the world would have passed, tens of millions would be affected, and tens and thousands and thousands and thousands of business of doors would be shuttered forever. This pandemic has affected everybody in Florida, everybody in the United States, everybody in the world. You know, nobody could have predicted this a year ago. This is where we would be. But there is hope. In less than a year, by a miracle, we created a vaccine that's been highly effective. Hospitalization rates are dropping. Recovery rates are improving. And life is getting back to normal. I thank every day that I live here in Florida, and one of my businesses happens to be here in Florida, that Governor DeSantis, after he received the data that we could control most of the outcome or the patients, that he allowed us to go back to work. We actually went back to work, and in Florida, our infection rate is lower than most states. Our death rate is lower than in most states. But he looked at the data and realized that if we continued to shut the thing down and not allow people to go to work, not allow children to go to school, the results would be devastating for years and years to come. We can see light at the end of the tunnel now. We've seen Florida, where hospitality is still a big portion of our business, and that's not totally recovered. But we talked about the budget the other day, and it's not going to be what we thought it was going to be 6 months ago. We've allowed people to go back to work. There's standards for businesses to operate, and unfortunately, as an operator, those standards are a moving target. In Florida, they're different than New Jersey, and they change all the time. In New Jersey, where I have a business, we spent tens of thousands of dollars to comply with what state and local government wanted us to do. A few weeks later, they changed the standards again. We tried to comply again. And then eventually they said, you know what? We're just going to pull the plug. You have to shut your doors and send your employees home. Send your employees home and tell them, good luck. Good luck. We're going to give you some unemployment, but good luck. In Florida, it didn't happen. It didn't happen. We opened. We did what we could to make people as safe as we could. You know, this virus, nobody knows who's going to get it, when they're going to get it, or why they're going to get it. I mean, we see people around the country, around the state, around the Capitol. Some are masked up. Some have shields. They got gloves. They never leave their home. They don't go out. Somehow they got the virus. Somehow they got it. Then there's other people. They're out probably acting a little irresponsibly. They don't wear a mask. They're out rave parties. But they don't get the virus. Why not? Nobody knows. There's some people that get the virus, don't know they had the virus, don't even have a fever. Who knows? Then there's other people that get it and, you know, tragically lose their life. But I can tell you as a business owner, going forward, for those that say that there's only 50 lawsuits right now, don't worry. Many of you know that I've filed a couple of tort reform bills in the last couple of years, and they're waiting. Right now, it's not politically correct to come after businesses that have suffered so much, so much. In this room, I'm a small business owner. Leader Grant's a small business owner. Rep DeSigley is a small business owner. And many, many, many others are. And I can promise you, every one of us here, we put our blood, our sweat, our tears, and our capital into our businesses. And the reason we did that is for our families. So we could support our families. So our families can earn our living. So we can get a return on our money. And as somebody that over the last 30 years I've hired thousands of people, to me, whenever I had to close a business or terminate somebody, I felt for their family more than mine, because I had a responsibility to keep their families eating, to keep their families roof over their head. I know my good friend, Rep Diamond, I don't see him here, but he talked about families, employees that are afraid to go to work when they're sick because they're afraid they're gonna get fired. You know what? I currently have hundreds of employees and nobody told me that they were afraid to come to work. A matter of fact, because of the CARES Act, if they had a little, you know, if they didn't feel good, they knew they were gonna get paid for 12 days and they were fine. In New Jersey, where it's still locked down, my employees there say, do you have any room for us in Florida? We'll move down temporarily because we need to feed our families. We know that if we get sick, we'll get better. We know how to protect ourselves. We know that every day that we leave our house, there's some risk that they could get in a car accident, trip off the curb, do something. But they need the ability to go to work. As Florida grows, I mean, to me, it's amazing that real estate is on fire in Florida. We have over 1,000 people a day moving here. And it's not just because they've realized there's sunshine here. They've realized that we have a government and we have a governor that realized that, okay, the virus is bad, but people can protect themselves. If they get sick, we can get most of them better, but we have to let people to go to work. We have to make sure our kids go to school so in 15 years their lives aren't ruined because they just lost 2 years of education. And the results are amazing. But there are people that are coming here in business that are afraid to invest their money right now. We need them to be confident that if they invest their capital, that the plaintiff attorneys that are bad actors don't come after them just because somebody got COVID. Just because somebody got COVID. Trust me, it may be 50 lawsuits now, but if we don't do this, it'll be 50,000 lawsuits soon. 50,000. And every business owner will suffer. As a small business owner, one lawsuit could put you out of business, because with one lawsuit, you could lose your liability insurance. Done. You can't operate without liability insurance. You can lose your hard-earned assets, and then your employees. Your employees, everybody will suffer. You know, we have an amazing state here, and I heard the arguments, and you know, we're all compassionate to the problems here. But again, in theory, I don't really think the bill goes far enough. We heard debate before that if you get the flu and you give it to somebody else, you can't get sued. This is an airborne virus that cannot be controlled. A virus is gonna do what a virus is gonna do. But without this bill, the bad actors that like to attack businesses, that like to try to say that they're just helping people, that are really just trying to help themselves, they're gonna come and business will fail. If businesses fail, your families will fail, your constituents will fail, and the state of Florida will fail. Please put politics aside and vote on this good policy. Thank you, Speaker.
Leader Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We yield our time back.
Having yielded your time back, Representative Jenny.
Mr. Speaker, thank you again. At this point, I would like to yield my time to Representative Geraldine Thompson.
Representative Thompson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, yesterday I asked Representative McClure to give me some concrete examples of what a business could show to demonstrate that the business had made a good faith effort. And he said he could not enumerate specific behaviors. He did mention social distancing as an example. I'd like you to contrast that, where a business doesn't have to demonstrate, doesn't have to show any evidence of making a good faith effort. I'd like you to contrast that with what has happened in this House. When we learned in March of last year about the coronavirus, when we came in to vote on the budget, we had to take a temperature scan. We were asked if we had any symptoms. Well, that morning, when I got into my car, which had been parked outside and was covered with pollen, I began to sneeze. And so I came to the Capitol. My temperature was taken. I had no temperature, no fever, but I was sneezing. And along with other members in this chamber, I was sequestered in another area in the building. That's an example of good faith effort. Temperature checks, social distancing if you're having symptoms, but we're told that the business can say, I tried, I did my best. Well, if a business requires social distancing, but the business itself does not move furniture apart, does not space seating apart, does not limit the number of people who come into the structure, even though you say you should social distance, have you made a good faith effort? There is no requirement that there be logs, that there be inspections, that there be monitoring, that there be evidence of deep sanitation. The business can simply say, I made a good faith effort. This house has protocols. Before we enter these chambers, we have to be tested every time. The business doesn't have to do that, doesn't have to demonstrate that that has been done. So we have no logs, no inspections, no monitoring, and we're asking a physician to say, if you bring a lawsuit, you have to demonstrate that it came about because of the negligence of a particular business. I want to share my personal experience with the virus with you. And I want to personally thank Speaker Sprouls for his call to inquire about my welfare. I was running for re-election, and this is a seat that has never been held before by a Democrat. And the people who have always held it believe it's their seat. So it was a tough campaign. And I went to a number of different places. And my husband was saying to me that he was noticing a change in my behavior. If I sat down for a minute, I fell asleep. I was bone tired. The fatigue was unbelievable. I would forget things when normally I would remember. I got up one Saturday before election, and I had breakfast with my family. Later, I went to a book giveaway for inner city children. Later, I went to a women's voting empowerment session at a park. And even after that, I visited libraries that were early voting sites to say hello to would-be voters. Now, can a physician determine whether it was the restaurant where I had breakfast that I got COVID? Could the physician say that it was the community center where I met inner city kids for a book giveaway? Was it the community center where I got COVID? Could the physician say that it was one of the libraries where I got COVID, all within the same day? But we're requiring an affidavit from a physician who will say that it was the negligence of this particular business that caused this person to contract COVID. That's impossible. So what we're really doing is cutting off access to the courts. And that's of great import. I want you to know that I've lived long enough that I remember in 1954 when separate but equal was challenged. It was access to the courts that gave us Brown v. Board. And later, when the practice of segregation in interstate commerce and travel was challenged by people like John Lewis and the Freedom Riders, it was the courts, access to the courts, that said that it was unconstitutional. And when a white man named Loving wanted to marry a black woman in Virginia, it was access to the courts that gave us Loving versus Virginia and the ability to marry who you love. So access to the courts is very important. It's nothing to be taken lightly. And this affidavit, which could have been made better by wonderful amendments that were offered, is required. So we're cutting off access to the courts. So when my husband suggested that I be tested for COVID, I was, and I tested positive. He tested negative at the time. And I was told by medical professionals that I had to stay home for 14 days, locked down. And when most of you were here being sworn in, as Florida's Constitution requires, 14 days after the election, I was at home. And when Speaker Sprouls called me, we talked about accommodations that might be possible to accommodate my situation. And I talked with Mr. Takis, who said that specialized notaries might be able to swear me in, or a judge could swear me in. And it just so happens that I know a judge from Florida's 5th District Court of Appeal. And so Mr. Takis got all of the official documents to me. And on November 17th, I was sworn in my home by my spouse. So for me, this is not theoretical. This is not a hypothetical situation. You had two people, very ill, trying to take care of each other, because somehow, somewhere, even though I wore a mask, I had a face shield, I wore gloves, I got COVID. And we're saying that anyone who goes to a business, a governmental entity, and gets COVID has to go through all of these hurdles, has to get an affidavit from a physician, no discovery, and the judge is supposed to decide. The judge, not a jury, has to determine that it was that particular business that caused the infection. Well, members, in any other situation, you know, and I know you've heard the saying, if it's not documented, it didn't happen. And so these businesses don't have to have any documents. There's no discovery. This is essentially a bill that cuts off access to the courts. And it is our judiciary, the third branch of government, that gives people redress. So let's not go backward. Let's make sure that the doors of the courthouse are open. Let's make sure that we are not rewarding bad actors. And so having experienced COVID, and it was not a pleasant thing, I want to say to you, let's make sure businesses are doing what they are supposed to do to make sure that people, including their employees, are protected. I thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank you, members. And I ask you to please vote no, press the red button, and defend access to the courts. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Representative Jenny.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I yield the remainder of the time to Representative Fentress Driscoll.
Representative Driscoll, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning. Members, this morning, we opened with a prayer where the pastor encouraged us to be mindful that in our work, we can have security without the sacrifice of freedom. Members, that resonated with me, and I'd like to echo that sentiment again, because now we actually have the ability as a chamber to strike the balance in the bills that we pass. But members, this bill misses the mark. While the bill says that its purpose is to provide security for Florida's businesses, what it actually does is provide no real relief to small businesses while sacrificing the freedom of everyday Floridians. The bill sacrifices the freedoms of everyday Floridians by limiting their access to the courts, their ability to hold bad actors accountable, and their right to a trial by jury. You've already heard about the affidavit requirement and how that's too high a standard, and it effectively affords blanket immunity. It erodes their ability to hold businesses accountable because we know that litigation is an effective tool in holding bad actors accountable. If you are a bad actor and you're putting yourself out there in the marketplace to be a business, you have to own the responsibility of your actions. We've also heard about how it takes away the constitutional right to a trial by jury, which I remind you, that is part of what our founding fathers fought for. The right to a trial by jury has been a fundamental right of mankind since the Magna Carta. No free man shall be arrested or imprisoned or property taken or outlawed or exiled in any way or victimized. And it goes on and it says, except by the lawful judgment of his peers or by the law of the land. In fact, the right to a trial by jury is enshrined in Florida's constitution as well. I also want to make it clear that a vote against this bill is not a vote against Florida's businesses. To the contrary, I am very much in support of Florida's businesses, as are members of my caucus. This is why we support and why I have co-sponsored Representative Evan Jenny's bill, House Bill 1617, that provides a better COVID liability shield, one that includes some of the improvements that Representative Diamond and I fought so hard for yesterday, and other provisions that provide real COVID relief to our businesses and everyday Floridians. You've now heard that in a state of over 21 million people with a pandemic that has been ongoing for more than a year, there are fewer than 100 COVID-related tort lawsuits. Members, that is a diminishingly small number. We've heard that this legislation is based on the fear of future lawsuits, but our small businesses are facing real problems right now, not imagined ones. Instead of just focusing on COVID liability, we should be focused on real relief. We need to be giving grants to our small businesses, all of our businesses that have had to make investments in safety equipment and protocols during the pandemic. Equipment like sneeze guards, hand sanitizer, the acquisition of personal protective equipment, investments that provide more outdoor seating, all of these cost money. Members, the biggest problem that our small businesses have is not getting sued, it's having enough customers who feel safe to come to their restaurant, to their barbershop, their salon, so that they can thrive. I'm a bit concerned about some of the debate today that seems to frame the issue of economic security versus the value of health and life. And for the tens and thousands of Floridians who have died in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic, I think that they want us to take steps further and not refer to them just as people who got COVID. We need real relief for our small businesses.
You can wrap up, Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that graciousness. Yes, members, this has been a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. And because it is a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic, we owe our small businesses and everyday Floridians our best. This bill is not our best, and I encourage you to vote down on it. Thank you.
The time having expired from that block, Representative Grant, you're recognized. Leader Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I yield my time to Representative Leak.
Representative Leak, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this bill is about protecting jobs. And Floridians have repeatedly told us they are ready to get back to work. If you want to get back to work, you have to have a job to go to. And if you want to have a job to go to, responsible businesses have to be able to reopen safely without the fear of getting sued. This is not about all of the parade of horrible bad actors out there that the opponents to this bill have told you are sure to appear. Because there is no doctor in this state who would refuse a person the affidavit to go sue any one of those bad actors they've just described. There is no jury in this state that would fail to hold guilty any of the bad actors they've trotted out in front of you. This bill is about responsible businesses trying to reopen safely. Those businesses who take the good faith efforts to navigate an ever-changing sea of guidance and rules and regulations. Those businesses who put the interests of their employees and their patrons and their families ahead of everything. And aren't those the people we want to protect? Isn't that what we want to encourage businesses to do? This bill is about jobs, and it's about jobs for those businesses and those employees and those people who are ready to get back to work. Pass this bill and let them get back to work.
Leader Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We yield back the remainder of our time.
Having yield back the balance of the time and having time expired on both the pro and the con side, Representative McClure, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And it's always unfair to have to follow Chair Leak. I don't know that I can put it much better, but Representative DeSigley, Duggan, and Rommel, I think capture the sentiment of this bill. And so I have a simple request. Help me defend Florida businesses and vote favorably on this bill.
Yeah. Representative McClure, having closed on his bill, the question now recurs on final passage of CS for House Bill 7. The clerk will unlock the machine and members will proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Have all members voted? The clerk will lock the machine and announce the vote.
83 yeas, 31 nays, Mr. Speaker.
Show the bill passes. Congratulations, Representative McClure. Are there bills in the special order calendar?
None on the desk, Mr. Speaker.
Show the bill passes. I said it. Members, are there announcements? Announcements. Representative Valdez, and announcements.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, as we're gathering here today doing the work of the people of the great state of Florida, sometimes we miss opportunities with our families and special days. And I just wanted to take this opportunity of personal privilege to just wish my son, Alex, a very happy birthday. It's his 34th birthday. And please join me in wishing my son a happy birthday. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for the opportunity.
Happy birthday, Alex. Happy birthday. We wish Alex a happy birthday. Representative Roach, in announcements.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not quite sure where he is, but I wanted to take a moment to ask the chamber in joining me in wishing our colleague, Representative Juan Fernandez-Barquin, a happy birthday today. So wherever he is, happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Representative Hart, in announcements. Representative Hart.
Thank you, Mrs. Speaker. I want to say thanks to everybody who's been so kind to my granddaughter as she participated in the PAGE program, and that's Zyleria Morrell. Thank you.
Representative Williams, in announcements.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As we do our duty to serve the people in the Capitol, we miss very, very special days. I had a granddaughter 6 years ago. At the time that she was born, coming out of the birth canal, they broke her collarbone. She survived that. A month ago, she had her gallbladder removed. She survived that. For some reason, they call her Lil Pat after me. But today, I want you all to help me celebrate her sixth birthday with no problems. Bounce back. call her grandmother, Nana, after the surgery of her gallbladder being removed. I don't want you to worry because I got this. Jordan, I want to say happy birthday to you and continue to be the strong person that you are. You're carrying my name, so I know you can do it. So help me wish my grandmother, Jordan, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Jordan. Any other announcements, members? Seeing none, Representative Renner, you're recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House, after receiving reports, adjourn for the purpose of holding committee and subcommittee meetings and conducting other House business to reconvene upon the call of the chair.
Members, all in favor say yay.
Yay.
All opposed, no. Show the motion is adopted. The House is adjourned.